You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, we have a very serious and important conversation about all the recent news in NWSL. We then talk about CONMEBOL, the upcoming match days, U.S. men's national team, and a brand new statue in L.A.
That's right. Plus, we talked to Sebi Salazar of ESPN. Absolutely incredible. Finally got him on the show. We talk everything about where Mexico is, where the men's national team is. And also, we have a very fun conversation you have to watch regarding Bob Bradley. That and more today on the Cooligans.
Yo, it's me, Dave Vianich here. And I've been hanging out with the Cooligans, having a nice. And I hope you've been having a nice, too.
Yeah, baby!
Okay.
Come on.
Let's begin. Let's get ready. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
That's right, it is. And my name is Alexis Guerreros.
Okay, we got fun and exciting and serious show today. A lot to discuss today, but we're excited about today's guest. We have Sebastian Salazar.
Oh, from wow. You gave him the church pronunciation.
Okay. It sounds like, you know, the principal's calling him in from on the loudspeaker.
Uh-oh, you in trouble, Sebastian.
Sebastian Salazar of ESPN FC and Football Americas. He's joining us later today to talk CONMEBOL, to talk CONCACAF, USMNT, and a lot of other subjects like DC United and Leagues Cup, a lot to cover. But we have to start today's show on a more serious note because this is our first opportunity to discuss what's been going on with the NWSL. The recent news, the bombshell of an article from Meg Linehan, friend of the show, Katie Strang as well, who co-wrote the article, and the issues of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, coercion.
I want to say that they brought them to light, but apparently they had been brought to light.
Yeah.
And buried, which is not how you handle these things.
Right. So, look, when it comes to issues like these in the workplace, we know that women face challenges in the workplace that men do not. That is obvious. You know, we are, we've tried to be a show where we simply, we're not actively thinking about, like, let's get female soccer players on the show for any kind of
Let's just get soccer players. We don't care what don't matter to us. If you kick a ball and get paid for it, we want to talk to you. You feel me?
Your life is more interesting than ours, uh-huh. Right? So we're interested. We've had plenty of NWSL players on the show, and to hear about these things that happen in many workplaces, maybe it's us being naive. Maybe we just think, oh, these players, they're the best players in the world. They are icons. They are heroes to so many. They probably don't deal with the same things, right? And
right.
How wrong were we, right?
Yeah, because absolutely. Especially when you think of, you know, wanting to be a coach in a league that's a women's league, you'd almost think like you've been vetted or you made it to a point where the creeps and the weirdos have been sort of, you know, I mean, if you got into it for a reason other than the love of the game, you've kind of been pushed out of the game. And it's shocking to see that even at a high level, those things persist. And to find, it just feels so odd to me that, and this is, again, our naivety, but in a league for women felt uncomfortable about coming out about a man who was a predator. You know what I mean? It's like, this feels like the place where you kind of should be able to say that. And this felt like the place where you would have people that have your back. So in light of this article and incredible, reporting, shouts again to Meg Linehan and who was the
Katie,
absolute incredible reporting. And obviously, you know, shouts to Mana Shim and Fairley, who put themselves on the line and told their story. a lot of things. And a lot of the players that came to defend them, like an Alex Morgan, who put out, well, here's what I know about what happened. Yeah. I've been trying to say it. And here's an email I got from Lisa Baird. And that led to that. Plus this reporting led to Lisa Baird's resignation. From the NWSL.
We've had Lisa Baird on the show. She was on the show a couple months ago. There's just so much. Reading the article was truly heartbreaking, right? It's like paragraph after paragraph of really no one stepping up to resolve this issue, right? And right. Obviously, we're talking about head coach, former head coach of the North Carolina Courage, Paul Riley, who was previously the head coach of the Portland Thorns, and where the initial accusation and investigation happened. But there's so many things at play because so many people clearly dropped the ball. There are Thorns management for not being very clear about why he was why his contract wasn't renewed. There and the former NWSL commissioner who, you know, when this investigation is happening and you have this information, it shouldn't be where, you know, 6 months later, Paul Riley has another job. Like when you hear the allegations of like trying to take a player out on a date and constantly or, getting them drunk and not a person that should be around young women.
Answering the door to your office in your underwear, that wouldn't fly in any other job.
Right.
If that happened at a Chipotle, there would be, you know, I mean, that person would be fired. How exactly. Is this allowed in the NWSL? And then on top of that, it's the questions have to be asked because if the email that Alex Morgan sent that said, hey, I just want to remind you, Lisa Baird, you're new in the job. Hey, there was this thing that happened in Portland. You might want to take a look at it. And for her to respond, hey, that investigation was already closed. Enjoy your day, which seems cold. I want to know what happened in that investigation. Who led that investigation? Why was this person able to get another job? Why did the Thorns front office and or whoever was involved in that, which could, by the way, we know a lot of the people that work for Portland and some of these clubs. These are good people. I don't know who led this investigation. I'm not talking about that. Everyone else, you know, like the person the person who just got the job in the marketing department, they're the ones that have to deal with this. You know what I mean? They're the ones that are seeing the tweets. It's like that. It's not going to the top level. So it's a shame that they have to deal with the sins of some of these other folks. But I'm glad that someone actually has to sort of answer. It's like, how did this investigation lead? Who led the investigation? Right. What were the results? And then the question becomes, what happens next? You know, you and I are big fans of the league and we want to see the league survive. Can the league survive something like this?
Yeah, look, and there seems to be a reckoning now where so many players are coming out. I saw Lisa Devana. She plays for the Matildas. And there's a Venezuelan, I forgot her name, a Venezuelan player that plays in Spain right now. And everybody's saying, like, this is a problem. This is not just NWSL. This is happening all over the world. And the frustrating thing now, you know, NWSL did put out a statement saying, like, we're going to reopen that investigation. We're going to look into all these details. But why couldn't that have been Lisa Baird's response when Alex Morgan reaches out to her? Like, there has to be, there seems to be, you know, that same issue with a lot of institutions where they protect the institution more
versus
than the
people in it. Yeah.
Than the players. And that seemed to be the case where, and I think, you know,
to get to that point, you don't have an NWSL without the players.
Right, right.
You can't have two logos fight each other in Photoshop.
Exactly.
You need people to wear that kit and play that game.
Yeah, I mean, Meg Linehan has been on several TV shows kind of mentioning this as well about how there's a little bit of fear of calling out the league because there's a fear that the league will fold and it will fall apart and any negative news the league will end up dissolving because it has happened to WPS, the WUSA, the two former leagues before NWSL. And there's a lot of people that were in those leagues that dealt with that are afraid that it will happen again.
I have an idea though. I think if it is going to survive, and I hate saying this because it's even more pressure put on these folks, but I think it's going to be off the strength of the former players, you know, the former leaders, the folks who had been here before, women's national team players that are retired now. It's going to take those folks coming back and maybe righting the ship. And for a lot of people that are saying, like, oh, the league may fail, it doesn't make money, MLS has claimed to not make money still. You know what I mean? Never. Uber still don't make money. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe there needs to be like additional funding or something, or fundraising that happens to be able to stabilize the league. And also, what a great opportunity for someone with or corporation with the vision of what this league can be and what the ratings can be and what it showed during quarantine and what, you know, the women's national team ratings are, that can say, you know what, maybe an investment now is going to lead to a great, you know, a great return on investment in the future. Maybe that can happen. And hopefully some of the former players can come back and be those leaders. Some of the players like Carly Lloyd, who's retiring, maybe she can stay on and be a bit of a front office leader. And it's unfortunate because they've already done their job. You know, I mean, they did what they had to do, but maybe that's what it's going to have to take to sort of correct this and to make sure that, you know, stuff like this doesn't happen in the future.
Yeah, clearly the league in itself, you know, has to continue to grow and stabilize and get these bad people out of the game. I mean, it's you know, this is especially with coaching. You know, you're in a position of power. The players in a vulnerable position where they're looking for your respect. They're looking for minutes. They're trying their absolute hardest, and no player should feel like, you know, that they have to that they can be taken advantage of or do something that they don't want to do.
You
just
gotta
to simply
sleep with your coach
do their job,
to let like the league survive.
Our guest coming up, Sebastian Salazar, said this on Football Americas, and I really liked it because he mentioned that he was you know, he's a coach, and there is no room for any ambiguity about the safety of players and the comfort of players. You are a coach. You have to hold yourself like to a very, very high standard. You get one chance. You mess up once, that's it. No, people are not going to trust you. Parents are not going to trust you.
Yeah,
like
it's not the Catholic Church. You don't just get to move to a different parish. You know what I mean?
And that's the kind of thing where it's not about protecting the institution, right? That right, we all can agree with that, but it takes that bravery to say, hey, this has to stop right now. And to have, you know, three coaches just in the last couple months deal, you know, have these accusations come out, like that's it. The players are done with it. They don't have to deal with this like mental, emotional, sexual abuse to simply do their jobs. That's the thing.
And to not even be paid well enough, like Bethany Balser, who's, you know, trying to end the side hustles and all that. And she's very open about, I mean, could you imagine all that pressure of, you know, all this happening to you and, you know what I mean? And on top of that, you can't even pay your bills. It's like everything mounts on top. And then you have to play the game.
That's another, like, and that's a longer conversation too, because the players don't get paid enough to simply say, yo, I'm going to walk away from this abuse. They have to, like, they want the opportunity to keep playing, to maybe playing the national team.
It's a manipulation cycle. It's a real shame. So, but like I said, that's why hopefully maybe some of those former players, maybe those players that are retiring, some of the ones that we look at as leaders, whether it's politically or in their community, maybe they can come back and have some type of leadership role, kind of like Yael has done for Gotham FC. Maybe use that as a bit of a model to show that, you know what, you can be a leader and you can stop these things from happening, hopefully, by being there and showing that there is a path forward and there is someone who's going to listen to you, because what's happened already should never happen again. And it's a damn shame that it did.
Exactly.
All right, Christian, let's talk about CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, because as you know, Fubo is the official streaming home of the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying. We've talked about it before. And World Cup qualifying is not going as smoothly for everyone, although CONMEBOL, it's starting to settle into the first, second, and the third. Although Uruguay may have a little bit of a test coming up. We got another three-match week coming up. What are you looking at?
Right now, that Brazil Colombia from the second match day is going to be pretty exciting. Colombia is at home. Colombia, again, I say it week after week, but Colombia is just underachieving.
This is your home country.
Everyone knows that.
Right.
But a point against Brazil. Brazil has not even drawn a game. This is going to be really, really tough. But Colombia at home, she should at least be able to get a point against Brazil.
Well, so much has happened for these two teams, right? Rafa Benitez came out and said James Rodriguez needs to basically stop playing video games and care about the sport if he wants to, you know, be better. And Mbappe called Neymar a bum. You feel me? So like both teams, they got a little bit of reckoning here. You know
what I mean? They got a lot to prove. Okay.
Are you a bum or not? You know what I mean? So, and for those of you who don't know, it's match day 11. Then next comes match day 5. Mm. And then next comes match day 12, just as you remember learning in school. So the second match day.
Simple maths.
Yeah, okay. Right? The abacus done got shifted a little bit. Match day 5, which is the second match day, it's Uruguay versus Argentina. And then match day 12, it's Uruguay versus Brazil. So, you know, you want to stay away. There's a little bit of a bundle between position 4 and position 7. There's a little bit of a cramp status there. And everybody wants to stay away from that fifth spot. But Uruguay seems to be like the team everyone agrees that should be third, right? You know, they're pretty stable. They play very defensively. They've got some great players that are towards the end of their career, like Suarez and Cavani. So this should be like a really big year for them. But this is a big test. You know what I mean? If they walk out of here not having won both of these, they could be back in that playoff position hunt, which you don't want to be.
I'm simply concerned about Uruguay a little bit, especially since they've scored 13 goals, but they've allowed 10.
Yeah,
for a
very unlike them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for a team in third place is a bit surprising. So I think that, you know, third and fourth are still up for grabs. Any of from Ecuador, Colombia, Paraguay could very much take one of those two spots. So Paraguay is another team that I. Also, I think just underachieving. They have a big game against Chile. I just want to put this out into the universe because, you know, we see him week in, week out for NYCFC, but Jesus Medina, he's been posting. He does the subtweets when he didn't get called up. He hasn't gotten a senior call up to the Paraguayan national team. And I think there's an opportunity. Get him at camp. Just see what he's up to. See what he looks like. See what the chemistry is.
But, let him train against some of the other players. Let's see what he can do in training. Come on.
Exactly. You know,
he's been playing well too for NYCFC.
Exactly. This year I think has been a kind of transformative year for him. He's been growing up, maturing, getting some bigger goals. Yeah, there are opportunities. You know, I think even NYCFC fans want a little bit more, but I think it's time to give him an opportunity. So I hope in this window or maybe the next window before the World Cup, he gets at least one opportunity. I think it's well deserved.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, the U.S. has a lot going for it as well. Pretty tough matchup. We've got Jamaica, which is happening today, right?
Today, right after this. Yeah,
right after
switch
this.
Over on ESPN.
So thank you for watching us, the official pregame. And then we got Panama and then Costa Rica, which, you know, the way we've been playing over the summer, you would imagine these are three teams that we could easily beat, right? We beat Mexico twice in finals. Even with our C squad, we beat them. But as it's proven, World Cup qualifying, everyone juices up a little bit different. You know what I mean? right? People, they do a couple more push-ups before the match. You know what I mean?
We need whatever happened in those summer tournaments. We need more of that. If we need just some more Kellen Acosta, just shithousing, just being an absolute, being annoying.
Yeah.
Let's go. Okay. Turn it up to 11.
Dude, but maybe we need to poke him in the side a little bit before the match just to get him going. You know what I mean?
Okay, bring out the Quincy Ameriqua tactics, you know, whispering in people's ears.
Right? You got to get in their brains. You feel me? You got to get in their minds. Get them off their game. But Jamaica's going to be tough. Panama's going to be tough. Costa Rica's going to be tough. Do you have any predictions? How do you think we're going to fare in this three-match week?
I think the good news for the U.S. men's national team, Mikel Antonio of West Ham is not playing for Jamaica. There's obviously issues with Premier League players in the U.K. They can't travel, COVID restrictions. It is a Brexit punishment. You know, you want to leave Europe? Okay, well now you're gonna have
you got no gas, and now you good players can't play in the Caribbean.
Okay, and now the muffins are $4,000. Deal with it. but also we don't have Christian Pulisic well, so that is a challenge for us as well. So it's Jamaica, Costa Rica,
Panama is the second match there.
I think win against Jamaica, win against Panama and draw against Costa Rica.
I think U.S. win all three because McKennie's back, baby.
Yeah.
You feel me? So double lock that room. You know what I mean?
You ain't going. Yeah. You
know, but, let's pick a hotel far from any nightclubs or bars.
Turn on the Find My iPhone app on right? him. But like, you just, we need to know where you are iPhone, all time.
What do they call AirTags? Just put one on his jersey. You feel me? Let's just keep track of which one of the nicest shoes you brought. Oh, it's these Off-Whites clip. You ain't wearing them to the club without us knowing.
You know, you gotta just scuff up his sneakers, dirty all his shoes. He's not gonna want to go out. He's like, look at my sneakers.
Could you think of anything more cruel? Damn. That's what you know, Christian ain't a fashion dude right there. You said scuff a man's shoes. I'd be off the team. Weston McKennie picks Mexico as his new national team because of that.
Hola, I am from Mexico.
Yeah. Hola, everybody. ¿Dónde está el Chipotle, you know? A lot of Chipotle references. Buy an ad on the show.
All right, Alexis, I don't know if you saw this recently. Some LA Galaxy news. Friend of the show, friend of ours, yeah. Landon Donovan. for years, okay? Yeah. we go back a long time. But Landon Donovan had a statue unveiled, made for him, LA Galaxy, honoring the MVP trophy, the MVP trophy is named after. So we finally saw it. Everybody was waiting. We heard about the news, and boom, here it is. Look at this.
Not only did I see it, I can't unsee it. whoever made the statue, whoever they hired at LA Galaxy to make the statues, because the David Beckham one is also kind of weird. But this one, I don't know. I don't know if a lot of fans don't know this. This is actually a pose of his after he scored a very famous goal for LA Galaxy, where shortly after he celebrated by eating local children. Why does his face look like this, dude? Why?
So look, when I first saw it, I didn't think it was that bad. Okay.
This goes to show who you are and who I am. As soon as I saw this, I said, why are you disrespecting a legend on your team? And Christian's like, let's find the positive.
I just, you know, I find beauty in everything. Okay. Yeah,
which is why you said yes to working with me so many years ago. So it's only fair.
So look, I don't think it's horrible. When I saw the reaction to it, I'm like, it's not. I don't think the reaction is completely accurate to how, you know, quote unquote poor it is. I don't think it's really that bad. This is the issue. The problem with statues, when you make a bronze sculpture, you take a big chance when you want to show teeth. When you show teeth on a statue, you have to nail it perfectly because this it can look a little scary.
I don't know who said this on Twitter. Somebody said like, "Wow, statue technology has really regressed over the last few thousand years." You know, they used to be really good at it, you know? And we have, I guess, what, the makeup people from The Walking Dead got to make this one? This is horrific. This is scary.
The homie Lindsay Adair, she had tweeted this, but she just reminded me that this statue looks like the Uruk-hai from Lord of the Rings. It looks like one of the orcs, which made me laugh immediately. So funny.
Raise your hand if you're watching this and that plane of a reference also flew over your head. Have you heard that?
But this is the real problem, right? Nowadays, there's a like an avant-garde. This modern bronze sculpture attempt to add emotion to these statues. You know, we were just at the Emirates. I saw the Dennis Bergkamp statue. It was a classic statue, not much detail, just looking chiseled, the chiseled version of Dennis Bergkamp. Now,
as if he was brooding when he scored that goal, you know?
And now people are like, let's add emotion, let's add some more character to these statues. But you're going to you're going to scare the little LA Galaxy children away with some of these statues. They're very bold.
If you haven't seen it, this is what happens to your point. When you add wrinkles in a bronze face, it's like, remember when you were kids and you would put glue on your skin and it would look like second skin, and then you would kind of like wrinkle it or peel it off? It looks like that. Like, I'm scary. My skin's falling off. That's what this looks like. They were also super generous with the amount of hair he has, but not that generous with my guy's hairline. If you're going to do it, go all the way.
They could have been a little bit kinder, you know? There was a point in time, just embellish a little bit. You know?
Sneak it up a little bit. It already doesn't look like him anyway. Give him the high school hairline.
He looks like he's mad about the hairline you gave him.
Yeah. He actually looks like he's attacking the sculptor. That's what the sculpture looks like. Like, which might have happened at night. Yeah. The sculpture might have come alive.
Look, in my opinion, is it terrible? I wouldn't use that word. I mean, it is an artistic attempt, and it is a journey into trying to show a little bit more depth and character.
And
to
we
the,
should actually
to
give them
a moment.
We should give them some credit because it takes a lot of guts and a lot of balls to hire an LAFC fan to make the statue. I mean, it's just absolutely impressive.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation because the whole day was, yeah. I mean, there were fights. There was wild disrespect on both sides. Everybody was going crazy. But we'll talk about that wild El Tráfico in the future. But we have our guest coming up. We have to talk to Sebi Salazar of everything going on in Conmebol, U.S. men's national team, because he's going to be working the U.S. Jamaica game. So look out for that.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this podcast episode. We just want to break in with a word from one of our sponsors. Actually, it's us, and it's our Twitch channel.
That's right. You know, you've seen us on Fubo TV. You've listened to us on the podcast. Maybe you've clicked like on one of our personal seductive photos on Instagram. Okay?
You know how we love those thotty pics.
Okay. We know the game, all right? We're not going
to... Anything for likes and views, baby.
Yo, that's what you got to do nowadays. But we're also on Twitch. We live stream... every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern time for Prem Show. But we do other stuff as well. We do watch-alongs. We interview people. We play FIFA. And we're going to be doing a lot more stuff on there. So join us on Twitch. Hit the follow button. It is free.
That's right. So just go to twitch.tv/soccercooligans or make it easy for yourself and just go to eltwitche.com. That's eltwitche.com. And that'll bring you right to our account. And hit that follow button right now. What you waiting for? Christian, our guest is finally here.
I am so thrilled because this dude is someone who I've been a fan of for so long. You know how you have people, favorite players, things that connect you emotionally to the game. And this man is one of those people, or just like one of those shining lights in American soccer. And
laying it on heavy. So,
it's long overdue. Long
you trying
overdue
to get in this guy's will? To get him on the show. I got to be honest. I don't like him that much. I think he's great. You've seen him on ESPN FC. You've seen him on Football Americas. Oh, my God. DC legend. Let me see if I get this right. Graduate of Westminster College.
There we go.
Which is famous for the dogs, I guess.
The dogs, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only Sebi Salazar, everybody.
Wow. Sebi. What an
what
intro.
Is good?
Christian, you want to be my agent or what? What's going on here?
Sign me up. Okay. Yeah. I don't read any contracts, but you're going to get a lot of deals. Okay? Yeah.
Sign it, baby. It don't matter.
Sebastian Salazar, thank you so much for joining us, man. Yeah, we've come across each other a couple times throughout the years. And it's a crime that we haven't had you on the show yet, but thank you so much for joining us. The first place to begin right now, obviously there's a lot going on when it comes to World Cup qualifying, and I want to get this business end of football right now, because obviously the U.S. men's national team, CONCACAF, CONMEBOL, we're on Fubo TV. There's a lot going on. It's tight right now as when it comes to 2-5. It feels like Brazil's gonna pretty much take it. But what have been your first thoughts about especially these condensed match days in CONMEBOL, and how certain are we that Brazil and Argentina have it as a lock to get through and make it to the World Cup?
Yeah, so you said Brazil is a lock. I think both Brazil and Argentina are a lock. You're not wrong to suggest that Argentina are a bit off Brazil. Brazil's gonna run away with it as they have in the past. But I think those two are pretty clearly in. I think Uruguay is a very safe bet. I mean, them in third right now, there's so many matches left to be played, still nine. But I think for me, the real story is just that the teams that have fallen off out of nowhere, like your Chiles, your Perus. Peru was, for me, a very good team, a team that deserved more at the last World Cup. And Chile was winning Copa America back-to-back in 2015 and 2016. And it's kind of one of those stories of when you have your old national teams and you don't really recycle the young guys in. You can see a drop-off. So I think that, for me, is the story of CONMEBOL. One, that Argentina's not going to have, like, a dramatic fourth or fifth place finish where they desperately need something from Messi magic to get into the World Cup. I think they're going to avoid that drama this year. So now that you got Brazil and Argentina, and it's about everybody else. And I think, for me, really, that Ecuador-Colombia is going to be very, very interesting, because I think that's probably the fault line there, right, of, like, who gets in and who doesn't.
Now, who's been helped more now that Messi is playing with Neymar on the same team? They're both playing for PSG. Who benefits more, Argentina or Brazil, or do any of them?
Well, it has to be Argentina, right? Because it's basically like PSG slash Buenos Aires, you know? I mean, you got Di Maria, you got Paredes. I would just have to think that those three guys playing together, not just playing together, but training together, creating a real relationship is going to help Argentina a lot. Maybe Neymar ends up feeling left out. That's always seems to be the vibe with Neymar, no? Like, wherever he goes, he always seems to have his feelings hurt, maybe not be included in the way he wants to be included. So of all the kind of fissures in that PSG locker room that we always hear about, and I'm sure you guys, having been just in Paris, know about it as well, you know, I think those might be some interesting dynamics in that locker room, more so than at the international stage. But I got to think, if it helps anybody, right, it just got to be Argentina, because those guys are going to be living the dream there in Paris.
Yeah, yeah. Experienced Parisians like ourselves really know the ins and outs of PSG. Yeah. But it was interesting, because speaking of Neymar, because Mbappe just recently had to respond to a comment that apparently he called Neymar a bum. He was frustrated, but he didn't get a pass that he should have received, and he called him a bum. And then he responded by saying, like, this is how we talk to each other. It's over. It's not a big deal. But I feel like it's a big deal. You don't call Neymar a bum that easily, and everybody's going to let it go.
There's only like four people that could call Neymar a bum, and Mbappe might be one of them.
and many of them might be on his team, right? Because one of the other ones is definitely Messi, who can call him a bum. Look, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we pretend like we know these guys, like we know what Neymar is like, but he does cut a sensitive figure, right? He does cut a figure of a guy who you're like, okay, this guy's in his feelings a lot, for right or for wrong. And it, I don't say it influences his career, because people would say that in a negative way, but I do think it impacts his career and his play. And that's probably all of us, right? Like, our emotional state and whatever we're not doing when we come to work, it comes with us.
Yeah. Okay. He does have a sad boy kind of aura.
Right?
I never noticed that, but now it's making sense.
You know, you can, no matter how,
like,
many tattoos you get.
Like the brooding guy, right?
Yeah. Because no matter how many.
Handsome, look like you're angry. It's like, right.
No matter how many tattoos you get, you can't cover up your vulnerability.
Right?
So, you know what I'm saying?
He also does kind of look like he's about to cry every time he smiles. He does that, like, that wincing smile. And you're like, did someone step on your toe, or are you happy right now? Which one?
And rolling around on the ground for 10 extra seconds doesn't help any of it, right? So it's all part of the persona.
Okay, yeah, it's part of the game. It's part of the game, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about U.S. men's national team. Obviously, USA against Jamaica, World Cup qualifying. You will be hosting pre- and post-game. This is an exciting time, an interesting time. Even, especially, you just mentioned the some of the national teams in South America, and how when they keep their older veteran players, like, they tend to struggle a little bit. And it seems wild now where, I mean, we barely have veteran players on this team, and it is going young. I mean, you have 2-3 good games in MLS, you're getting a call up, right? Yeah. So what are you expecting, especially out of this game against Jamaica, which will be on ESPN as well?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a really good question. It is such a young team. I mean, you know, we had Hercules Gomez over on Football Americas the other day. We had him build up his like dream 11, and they are like kids. You know, you hate to be disrespectful, because they're professionals, but in terms of international soccer, they're at the very, very beginnings of their career. Even guys who we talk about as like established players in the national team, like Tyler Adams, Weston McKinney, they're still so young, and whatever their age is, whatever their European experience is, this is still their first real go around in World Cup qualifying, where games are, in as much as can be in a soccer sense, live or die. So I think very similar to the first three games, I think kind of everything hedges on these three games, because you hit the 6 out of 14 game mark. I'm not a math genius here, but you're basically at a halfway point. And if you haven't started to win and win at home by then, you're in really big problems. So this first game against Jamaica and the second home game as well against Costa Rica on the 13th, you know, not to overstate it, but they're must wins, and they're games where Greg Berhalter is going in with a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of young players. The only thing you should say about that is he also went into the Honduras second half with a lot of unanswered and a lot of young players, and it worked out brilliantly. You know, they scored 3 goals in half an hour. So
when we look at Mexico, which is probably our biggest competition, I know Canada's doing really well. Mexico at the top. We had a great summer against them, and now they're leading when it comes to World Cup qualifying. How do you think this Tata Martino experiment, if we could call it that, how do you think it's gone so far? And do you think the Mexican fans have confidence in their manager? And have they ever had confidence in their manager?
No. And that, you know, that trickles down probably as more, do they have confidence in the team, right? Because the team is responsible for not just years, but at this point, decades of kind of frustration, you know, getting to the same point over and over again in a World Cup and not eventually getting over that hump. I think Tata Martino to call it an experiment is an interesting word, right? They went out, they paid the most money they'd ever paid for a national team coach. They really kind of went all out on this guy who had not just the Barcelona on his resume, the Argentina on his resume as well. I think there are so many good signs for Mexico. You know, there's so much promise in terms of what he was doing through 2019 up until the pandemic hits. Then the pandemic hits and two kind of critical things happen. Raul Jimenez gets injured in a very serious way. And then this past summer, Chucky Lozano also gets injured. And so you go into those first World Cup qualifiers off of the Gold Cup, off of the Nations League, where Mexico, you know, you might say had better possession, created better chances in those games, but ultimately lost and lost to the United States, which is very significant down in Mexico. And there was real pressure on Tata Martino going into those games without like everybody at his disposal. Now you're sitting on top of the table. You've got those guys coming back. You've survived what was a very difficult, I think, potentially difficult start. And as much as this can be the case, I think Tata Martino goes into this space in a very, very comfortable position. The one caveat with Tata Martino is he's doing this bit where he's trying to clean up the national team. And maybe that's the reason that Mexico's always gotten to that, you know, point equis and not been able to get past the hump because of indisciplines. But it's costing the national team a lot of players. There are a lot of guys who are being, Chicharito's kind of the main example of big names that are being put to the side. And at some point, Mexico doesn't have the depth of talent to like absorb all those losses. And on top of that, the fans want to see those players. So it's a different calculus when we talk about pressure in Mexico versus the U.S. But I think if you actually look at the table, you look at how the team's playing and who's coming back, Mexican fans right now should feel pretty good about where they are, especially compared to where they felt after that Gold Cup defeat against the USC team. Right.
And yeah, I mean, the pressure is very clear on Tata, especially since when it comes to when you lose a player, then he's like, all right, Funes Mori, you're Mexican. Get on here. Fill out the paperwork. We need you, buddy.
He was like on the phone. And he's like, hello, Christian Pulisic? Huh? You like it? You like the sound of that, kid?
It's interesting though, like it's a very different conversation down there about dual nationals, you know, naturalizados. It's a much I say uglier conversation. Okay. There are people who do not want people who weren't born in Mexico on the Mexican national team. So the fact that an Argentine manager picked an Argentine forward to replace Mexico's, other than Hugo Sanchez, greatest striking legend, was really like tinder to a bonfire that's always burning, not simmering. It's always on fire down there. So Raul Jimenez could not be coming back at a better time for Tata Martino, because he diffuses all of that, especially if he plays well and scores.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, wow. He got his he finally got a goal, you know, ever since the injury. Again, Premier League, it was a huge moment. Yeah. You know, a couple, 2 weeks ago, we spoke to Richie Ledesma over at PSV. And he, obviously he played in a friendly. He's been through the U.S. Youth system. But he is one of these guys that can still switch over if he chose to. Mm-hmm. We saw Julian Araujo of LA Galaxy make the switch today, I believe, officially. So what do you think of those choices? I know you and Herc have these conversations often, but that dual national, Americans playing for either Mexico or the U.S. What is your sort of feeling on these recent kind of decisions?
It's a fascinating topic, right? Because it's going to be a huge part of the player pool, not just for the U.S., but for Mexico. And you imagine a player coming through that is really like a game changer for both, and almost like an Alabama and an Auburn recruiting against each other. Right. You kind of imagine that showdown for young talent. I think something that we talk a lot about, but it's actually very difficult to pin down, is identity. And maybe you guys will back me on this. Maybe your experiences have been different. For me, like personal identity is very fluid. And I think that's not something that a coach or a federation should chase. You don't know if a kid is going to feel Mexican, Honduran, American from a week to a month. That depends on what's happening in their world, in their life around them. Where you can impact identity is sporting identity. And I think that's where you win kind of the hearts and minds battle. And I think we're seeing that with a lot of these players who are choosing Mexico right now. David Ochoa is a great example. I think Julian Araujo is another example that is more recent, of players who grew up maybe identifying as both Mexican and American. But from a sporting standpoint, they identified as Mexican. Yeah. And so this, if we are honest about what it is, it's a sporting decision, right? These guys, when you choose to play for Mexico, you're not saying, oh, I'm not American anymore. Or when you choose to play for the U.S., you're not saying, oh, I'm not Mexican anymore. Right. You're saying, I'm going to represent this soccer team. And so I think that's where, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation, the teams of Major League Soccer and American soccer as a whole, that's where they can start to make those inroads in the Mexican-American community, turn the next generation of Mexican-American kids into fans of, you know, U.S.-based soccer. And then you're going to see those kids not only playing in the academies for those teams, but ultimately committing to the U.S. national team, as is the case with a guy like Ricardo Pepi, right? Right. He goes through the FC Dallas system. He's in the American system from a very young age. He's in the U15 team. And next thing you know, when the decision comes, it seems very much like Ricardo Pepi identified as an American athlete, right? And not as a Mexican athlete. And that seems to be what the decision is. So I think on a personal level, we kind of got to leave these kids to be. I think where you can see the work to be done, and this is for both federations, right? Because it's going to be a nuclear arms race. It's going to be a competition. How do you win the hearts and minds of that next generation? Exactly. It really is. It's like a propaganda war almost. And so both U.S. Soccer and the FMF are going to go toe-to-toe in that battle. And I'm super – because I don't have the answers, so I'm super fascinated to see what they come up with as kind of their recruiting tools in this new – recruiting war.
I picture like Thomas Roningen being sent to someone's house with maracas, and they're like, no, don't do it, dude. This didn't work before.
You know, I think we just need Nick Saban involved. He gets everybody.
Right? Coach K, right? He gets the players he wants. Teach him Spanish. Let's make this decision even harder for these kids. The rumor of Liga MX and MLS combining in one way or another seems to be coming to fruition with this League's Cup thing happening. How are you feeling about it? And is this the beginning, or as some people fear, the beginning of what's coming next? Or is this it? This was the big feared combination of leagues.
Yeah, so I am. I'll say this as a Mexican-American. I hope the powers that be in American soccer find some other way to market the sport in this country, especially on the men's side, that doesn't have to do with Mexico. I think there's obviously dollars to be made there, but there are other communities, right? There's other outreach to be had. And if soccer in this country is going to be only for Mexican Americans, we're just going to end up leaving a lot of people out. So as much as I love Leagues Cup, I think it's important to say, like, this isn't the only way to turn a profit. Right. You know, we see U.S.-Mexico friendlies almost, we were seeing them every 6 months for a while before the pandemic. And I think when we do that, we can take something that's great and water it down. Beyond that, what I'll say to your point, Alexis, is I think this is the end product, right? I hope this is, for all the talk that we ever heard of merger, this is kind of like what we're settling on. Because a real merger, to me, to me, would end up killing both leagues. Like, I don't think that's in the best interest for truly everybody and for the domestic soccer in those both countries, if we're being honest. I think this is a healthy compromise from the league's perspective, right? The one concern for me from MLS is that what happens if you get eliminated in group phase of this?
Yeah.
And your team's terrible and goes out early in playoffs. You now have professional soccer players whose seasons might last like 2 months and 3 months. So like 5 months out of the year, you're a professional player. How are you really, you know, getting any better, developing, or even more importantly, being seen on the world market in any relevant way? So I think the League's Cup is a good idea. I think the amount we're going to get it in 2023, you know, 28 teams or 27 teams from MLS, 18 from Liga MX is a little bit over the top. But if you want to include everybody, I don't know how you don't make this thing big. And to some extent, I'll say I'm glad that they didn't just slam this on top of the MLS schedule, because then we'd really be taking, like, for me, what would be even a more disrespectful turn from player safety, right? And like what it takes to put on a good product and not just throw dudes out there and put it on TV, you know, like, MLS rosters are not that deep. If you're only going to have a salary cap of, you know, $10, $20 million max to build your team, then you can't ask these guys to play 60 games like they do in Europe, because we're not going to end up getting the same product and everybody's
going to. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be the league. At least my perspective is there's going to be a couple exciting fixtures, but then we also going to have to watch Vancouver Whitecaps take on Querétaro, right? There's going to be some rough ones that are going to be a little weird.
You know, and what's the trade-off? Like, you get an LAFC Club America, that's great. But it is valuable, right? Because even in that Vancouver Querétaro, if Vancouver has to, well, if Querétaro has to go to Vancouver, somebody will show up from Querétaro, right? To that Vancouver game. And Vancouver will get that access point to that market. And for Querétaro, they get their brand on American TV, which means all their sponsorships and all their patrocinios back in Mexico are more valuable. They can sell their brand now as an international brand. So, you know, it's a win for everybody. Maybe the fans are saying Cincinnati Puebla. You know,
FC Cincinnati versus Club Tijuana. I mean, it might not be a huge draw.
Could you make that case though about a lot of both MLS and Liga MX? Like, if you're not a, like, maybe Sounders Timbers, maybe Toronto FC Montreal, maybe LA versus LA, but are DC United fans tuning in to like to a national game? You know, we don't even do that yet for MLS. Are we going to do it for MLS versus Liga MX? And are they going to do the same?
Right.
You know, I think there's some assumptions about viewership here that, you know, remain to be unanswered or remain to be answered.
Okay. Wow. So yeah, speaking of DC United fans, let's get to our Gully Squad questions. This is
nice.
Our opportunity, your opportunity to answer questions.
I need a Gully Squad shirt, dude.
Oh, we gotta get you
a Gully shirt. We'll get you one.
I'm wearing his lame ESPN board.
Also,
such a nerd.
Christian was the one who put this up. I got to show you the picture he used of you. It looks like your high school graduation photo. It might be your first ESPN picture ever.
I put up a photo in the Gully Squad Slack of, I usually just pull it from Google image search. And this is the photo that's up. It's like you're on a gray background. It's a perfectly fine
it's
photo.
It's like an up angle. You're wearing a plaid tie. It's just hilarious.
Is it like red, white, and blue tie?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
A little bit. That was my first day at ESPN.
I knew it.
Yeah, they were like, hey, freshman year. Yeah, and I was like, and I think they put on like some weird, am I very orange? Am I kind of like orangey?
Yeah, dude.
I was not, I hate that picture.
Yeah, I know. I look at this and I'm like, he wouldn't
you know
be
what?
Happy this is in here.
I think, you know what, Seb? Now we got to put it on TV because you said that.
Yeah, totally.
We explained it too much, so we got to talk about it.
Okay. Well, this question is from Douglas Reyes-Cerrone, who you may see from time to time on Twitter.
Spirit Squadron. Yeah.
Yes, yes. He goes, how are you feeling about Hernan Losada's job at DC United? DC United, I mean, really, they've turned things around this year. It's been from the beginning of the season to now, they've looked like a completely different team. And I'll add to that, I'm Dominicano, Kevin Paredes. Ooh. How excited are you about this young man?
Dude, enjoy him. Enjoy him while he lasts. That's all I'll say. Enjoy him while he lasts here in MLS, because that kid is destined for bigger things, for sure. For sure. I think he's a player that we'll see in Europe before too long. DC United to me has been honestly like a real pleasant surprise. I think the team is I don't know that like a standard coaching course would watch DC United and say, hey, this is what we're going to teach everybody. But from a neutral standpoint, and I'm not neutral, but just from a viewer standpoint, they're fun to watch, right? Like there got to be a point probably halfway through the season where I said, all right, I'm not going to like, I'm going to force myself to watch live every game because I don't want to miss the chaos. I don't want to, I don't want to turn on Twitter and get that pang of like, wait, DC's up 3-0 in the first half, you know, like, and they're doing that to teams and they're doing that to good teams from time to time. There are other moments where the team looks like, you know, it can't defend to save itself. And I know that's kind of part of the system, part of the approach. So I'll take it for now. I think, you know, granted kind of where the team was, what the team was in the years before this, both from a results standpoint, but then beyond that, kind of just the product on the field. It's a lot of fun to watch. It's chaotic. I think they're going to make the playoffs. And that's all we can really ask for, given kind of the limited investment. And as they grow, maybe we'll start asking for trophies and stuff. And I don't know that this style wins you trophies. I don't know that it lasts, you know, for a full season. I think we're going to see a lot of like breakdowns and injuries in this team, you know, as things get late, because he's asking them to do a lot. Like he is really asking this team to do a ton. You see, when you watch this team play, you get tired. And maybe that's one of the reasons I enjoy watching it, because I'm genuinely like watching what I think is exceptional effort from the players.
We have this question from Mike Thomas, and this is just goes back to the whole Mexican-American thing. This is exactly what he says. He's a Philadelphia Union fan. He said, people have asked questions about Carlos Vela in big games. What does Sebi have to say about his performance? And I mean, a beach ball being thrown in your direction here. Like, should I get popcorn for this answer?
Who asked those questions?
Mike Thomas, the best.
Lovely. Yeah, that was an incredible moment.
Yeah, I love Carlos Vela, man. I love Carlos Vela. Good player, that.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, the, you know, a couple, we were at MLS All-Star. We got to interview Bob Bradley.
Oh, my God.
Right?
And we made him laugh, by the way.
Right. And as we
the
were,
exact opposite of what you did.
as I was up, like beginning the interview, all I had in my head was, man, I hope he doesn't treat us like Sebi. You know what I mean? And it was, you know, we disarmed him. He was comfortable. We were talking about Ted Lasso. That's why, if only Ted Lasso had existed when you had interviewed him, it would have been a much calmer and sweeter interview.
And most people don't know that when you interviewed him, Sebi, when the exchange happened, you came directly to us. We were standing right there at that game. So we got the fresh reaction from you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I forgot about that. Yeah. Man. What a blur. What a moment that all was. That was crazy. That was like my first time ever getting caught up in like something viral. And oh my, like the amount of phone calls I got from people. My mom to this day still holds a grudge against Bob Bradley.
Hell yeah, dude.
She loves LAFC because she loves Carlos Vela. So she like used to watch LAFC religiously. She loved how they played, and then that happened. And I don't know, now it's bad vibes.
Es un demonio.
maybe better than anybody, my mom actually understands Bob Bradley's frustration with me.
It's okay. That's a good point.
The point. I actually saw the interview or like a clip of it that, of you guys and Bob, and I really was taken aback at how relaxed and like happy and friendly he was. And just like you were thinking, boy, I hope he doesn't treat us like he did Sevilla. I saw that interview and said, man, I am envious of the chemistry that these guys have with Bob. What a moment to have been.
Yeah, okay, you know? We were so scared. We're like, he's going to tell us to screw off.
What can we say? We're amazing at what we do, Sebi. So, Sebastian Salazar, thank you so much for joining us, man. This has been an absolute honor. There's way too many things to talk about. We got to get you back on the show real soon. Is there anything you want to let people know about before we let you go?
No, man, just watch the new show on ESPN Plus, Football Americas, with Hercules Gomez. We try to cover kind of everything in the umbrella, same things you do, U.S. Women's National Team, NWSL, and Major League Soccer, U.S. Men's National Team. Anything that has to do with soccer in the U.S., Mexico, North America, we try to be on it. So we do that show twice a week, Mondays, Thursdays on ESPN Plus. Check it out, and we'll see you on the desk for the qualifiers. We got one on October 7th against Jamaica, and then we're also doing the last of the three games, October 13th against Costa Rica, that game back in Columbus. So it should be two pretty good games and two like pretty awesome backdrops, you know, two new stadiums with roofs that should be loud. So we're really looking forward to it on ESPN. Those games will be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yes. And if you're watching this live right now on the 7th, the U.S.-Jamaica game is happening right after this interview. So please switch over to ESPN because it's on Football TV as well.
Yes.
Okay.
And by the way, thank you for everything you said about the NWSL and the players. Very necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
So, everyone should watch Football America.
Incredible show. You know, check it out regularly. You and Herc do amazing work. Keep it going. Okay. All right. We got to get to our Golasso gift. This is your opportunity to celebrate a goal that we will turn and we will clip and we will turn it into a gift that will live on the internet forever. Alexis will give you a scenario and feel free to celebrate it however you like. Alexis, what do you suggest?
Let's see. For some reason, you're playing in an ESPN match, right? You got some of the announcers versus some other folks. And you line up to score the final penalty. It's gone to penalties. And if you sink this, not only does DC United win an MLS Cup, but Bob Bradley has to apologize to you live on TV. You score the penalty, and you see Bob looking at you to apologize. How do you celebrate?
Ya me motivaste.
Yes.
That's the first, an earthquake. The first time in Cooligans history.
Break the equipment. Yes, I love it.
You didn't see me run out of the room, huh?
We missed that part, but we got the idea.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Go lasso gift.
Thank you so much, Effy, for that. We appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social channels. Make sure you follow at Fubo Sports as well. And subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the show, full interviews, and more clips of all the other great shows here on Fubo Sports Network. All right, Sevi, thank you so much again for doing that. Let us end the show the way we normally do, as is tradition. So please join us in this as well. So for Sebastián Salazar, yo soy Cristian Polanco.
Y yo soy Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
Los Cooligans!